Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Echo Entertainment half-year results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you'd like to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I must advise you this conference is being recorded today, the 5th of February, 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, John O'Neill, Chairman of Echo Entertainment. Please go ahead, Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you. Good morning. John O'Neill here, Chairman of Echo. Thanks for joining us for the half-year results. Some introductory remarks from me. You would have seen the press releases this morning regarding the half-year performance of the company, but also the advice that John Redmond has decided to resign, and he and his wife will be returning to the USA in the next few months, towards the end of April, beginning of May. The board has decided to appoint Matt Bekier as the CEO designate to succeed John. In the beginning of May. It's an orderly transition. Matt is well known, I think, to all of you, has had a long career with firstly Tabcorp from about 05 onwards, CFO role, then on to the demerger, the creation of Echo, and has been an executive director and CFO of Echo since its inception. He is, in our view, well-equipped to build on the foundations that John Redmond has established. John, as you know, was a non-executive director of Echo and with many, many years of casino experience. And towards the end of 2012, when we announced that Larry Mullen was moving on, John put his hand up and applied for the position of CEO and was ultimately the successful candidate. That was at a particularly challenging period for the company, which is all on the public record, but John moved from the NED position into the CEO role and provided great stability and leadership and direction through the challenge of 2013, which was principally around the unsolicited proposal process in Sydney, which John was very well equipped to lead. Then, more recently, the focus has moved to Brisbane, where another contest is underway. John has also laid foundations for enhanced improvement here at the Star at Pyrmont, as well as moving ahead with, besides the expression of interest process that's underway in Brisbane, further and much-needed improvement of our asset, Jupiter's on the Gold Coast. John will speak about his reasons for leaving, but they are personal, so it's not our intention to expand on that any further. We have plenty of opportunities to thank John personally over the next few months, but I'd certainly, on behalf of the board, thank him most sincerely now. We understand his reasons for leaving and going back to the States. His leadership of the business has been really just what we needed. We owe him a great debt of gratitude for stepping into the breach at a difficult time and led a very significant transformation of the operations and the strategic foundations of the company and its assets. The company is stable. We are seeing signs of improvement in the underlying business. We are looking forward to building on this momentum as Matt Bekier and his management team implement the programs that they have established under John's leadership. So that's my introductory comments, so I'd hand over to John.
Thank you, John, very much. I appreciate it. Good morning, everyone. Welcome, of course, to ECHO's conference call relating to the first half results. I'll touch, of course, briefly on what John just mentioned, my resigning from the company effective May 1. Again, for personal reasons, I'm not going to, you know, take a lot of questions or any questions really in that regard. This is a call that should be focused on the company's earnings and not necessarily on my departure. Matt will be assuming my role. He is, as John said, known to all of you. He has been involved with everything that we have been doing since I've been here, whether it be as a board member for the first part of my a couple years or the last year, doing everything we needed to do to set the strategic direction for the company, to implement the various programs that needed to be implemented to drive not only the top line, of course, but to achieve the proper expense structure that sets the foundation for this company's future. The best days for ECHO are ahead of it. I'm very proud of what we've been able to accomplish to date and very comfortable that Matt will be able to continue with the momentum that has been recently achieved with these results that, that you're seeing. So again, thank you to the board for the opportunity that they gave me. And of course, this company is in great hands with Matt's leadership going forward. It's great to have and maintain that continuity and maintain that momentum that this company is seeing right now. So with that, I'll start with the review of the release, and I'll just go right to page or slide 4. Again, I know all of you can read, but I'm just going to highlight a couple of points. Normalized NPAT for the first half, $71.5 million. Up 1.3% on the PCP. Of course, the company declared a dividend of 4 cents, fully franked. A normalized EBITDA, $210.3 million, slightly ahead of the PCP. The cost reduction program initiated in 13 continues to flow through, as I'm sure you've noticed when you study these numbers. I think what that also demonstrates is the rigor around what we have done, what we stated we would do to make sure that the not only we take the cost out, but that they stay out. So we've had great success with that. When you look at the revenue, normalized revenue across the group of call it $930 million, it's been a solid result when you look at some of the underlying reasons for it being down slightly. When you look at it, we're down about 7.4% across the group, and a lot of that has to do with hold, and some of which is due to volume, of course, and slots, of course, down slightly due to volume. But I think when you look at the momentum that we are seeing going forward, a lot of these reductions that we saw in the first half, given the momentum we saw in the second part of that half, and of course going into the second half of 14, will help to catch up quickly. Moving to slide 6, which I think is probably the best explanation of really what's going on. This is where we look at the impacts on our EBITDA. Of course, normalized EBITDA was relatively flat with prior year. But this year, when you look at the impacts of the win rate and the hold percentage, and you adjust for that, that's the true story. So you're really looking at, call it almost a $222 million EBITDA once you give effect for that. Hold percentage, as we all know, or win rate, smooths itself out over time. So these are things that are aberrations that aren't reflective of true operating performance. So I think this is one of the best indicators of really what happened in the first half. really was a tale of two quarters, with the second part of that half starting to see the traction and a lot of the programs we put into place. But again, when you look at this from this particular standpoint on a like-for-like, we're up just over 11%. The next slide, slide 7, covers the progress of our cost optimization program. Again, very happy with what's going on here. When you look at our OPEX in the first half being around $425 million, down $20 million, a significant dollar amount. And again, this is despite the inflation that you normally see year over year, as well as the increased operating footprint. One of the areas of that being the event center here at the Star, which was not in the first half of prior year. So even with that, we're seeing great results from our cost out program. And of course, I mentioned this at the last call, but one of the things that can never be overstated is the importance of these EBA agreements that were renegotiated or dealt with here at the Star and at Brisbane. They help bring some stability to that significant part of our cost programs going forward, and give all of us a little bit better degree of comfort that the out years truly are the best years moving forward here. Looking at the next slide, slide 8, just to highlight a couple issues. Again, slots you see down slightly at the Star. Really, the momentum picked up in the second part of the half, as I mentioned, and that gap, of course, has been closed already in the first part of the second half of this year when I talked about the momentum. Queensland was really impacted by the construction disruption on the Gold Coast. So all the reduction we saw there was, for the most part, solely in the area of non-rated play, which is all that walk-in business that we normally would get, but for the light rail construction that's going along or going on down there at the Gold Coast, which if any of you have been down there and tried to drive a car or take a cab, you can understand just how significant that problem is. Looking at, of course, the table game area, when you look at the Star, the reduction you're seeing there is about 40% of that reduction is due to the win rate. And again, that's in the private gaming area. 60% volume, again, in the private gaming area. We know what's causing it. We know where it is. And again, we've made significant strides on getting back some of that in the first part of the second half now. And then, of course, looking at the VIP side of life, the rebate, you're looking at turns in the first half this year being just under 12. Last year, just over 13, slightly over 13. We'll talk a little bit more about the VIP rebate when I get to that particular slide. So I'll move on to the next slide, slide 9, which is talks about the performance at the Star. Again, I think overall, the first half was a good half at the Star. You're looking at the OPEX being slightly under $250 million, and that's even, that of course, it's down almost 3%, and that's even after absorbing approximately $4 million in incremental payroll and whatnot related to the event center. And as I mentioned before, when you look at the main gaming floor and PGR table revenue being down, that is, as I stated, primarily the private gaming area, and 40% of that is really due to win, 60% volume. But again, we've clawed back a lot of that early on this past month. So we're very happy with the progress we're making there. I'm going to move on now to slide 10. Talk about Queensland specifically. Again, the market did well when you factor in where the problems were. And again, as I mentioned, primarily at the Gold Coast and all in the unrated business, which whether it's tables or slots, it's areas that were impacted by the significant light rail construction going on. And most most of that construction is starting to slow down, which is reflected in some of the momentum we started to see in our numbers in the latter part of the half. And, of course, that accelerated into the early part of the second half of FY14. So happy to see that turning around. But, again, this market is doing okay. VIP rebate, slide 11. Here, again, the thing to point out, sometimes it's not so obvious, but we have talked about this normalization methodology that the company uses. We use a five-year rolling average. Using that methodology resulted in the current year using a win rate of 1.62 with a 13 turn. Last year, of course, the normalization approach was a 1.6 hold or win rate and a 14 turn. So you have to adjust for that. And I think one of the better ways to evaluate the business is to look at page 27 or slide 27. It gives you a little bit better apples-to-apples comparison on what's going on there. Also to point out, when you see the one dot point dealing with the trade receivables, if you look at page 29, again, a little bit better reflection of what happened, what's happening with those receivables. Substantially, all of the delta, if you will, between that number, what you see on page 29, is a lot of the volumes that happen given the Western New Year significant amount of credit extension, all of which has already been collected and cleared. So that's always a good thing. And again, we had strong momentum in the VIP business in the first part of the year, which slowed down slightly in the second part of the half. With that, I'll turn it over to Matt to talk about the financials in a little bit more detail.
Great. Thank you, John. On page number 13, let me just reference a couple of numbers and give you a bit more color on some of the things that John has already referenced. Revenue normalized down 4.8% to $929 million. John's talked about the reasons. The only additional point perhaps to make is, in terms of momentum, we saw Q1 in the core business, ex-VIP, relatively anemic. It was a combination of factors, but including the fact that probably the loyalty program didn't initially get as much traction or as quickly as we thought, but we're pleased with the progress that we're seeing now in Q2. Conversely, the VIP business was very strong in the first quarter and then really was quite disappointing in the second quarter. That the revenue growth of 4.8% then translates into growth variable contribution of 3%. A couple of comments on that one. The biggest driver of that really is the fact that we've taken back a lot of the promotional allowances, the sort of freebies that we've been giving away in the past. That has basically improved our margin. We've also been able to reduce the IRB commission rate a little bit over the last 6 months. In terms of gaming taxes, we had a benefit here at the STAR where the underlying gaming tax actually came back, but that was offset by the additional levies imposed on us here in New South Wales as well as in Queensland. The cost of $425 million in the first half, I think that's a real standout. We had previously guided the market to expect sub $900 million for the full year. That $900 million essentially in our calculation last time we did the bridge on a conference call would have demonstrated that we'd taken the $60 million worth of costs relative to the 2012 year out. That $900 million included, when we did the bridge then, $8 million worth of extra rent in Brisbane. So we need to take that off. But even so, it's fair to say that the 425 came in well below where we thought we would be in the first half. I do want to caution you to not just assume that we're going to run on this run rate for the second half. There's more activity in the second half, and we'll be comfortably below $880 million, but you can't just double those numbers. Just be careful with that. But as John said, you know, with that taking the cost up, we've been able to offset the decline in the revenue and actually show a little bit of EBITDA growth, and you know, in a way that we believe sets us well for the future. Interest, underlying interest is $36 million for the year. for the first half, and I'll talk about the interest in a minute. Tax, just below 30% tax rate. I think you should assume that we'll always be around about 30% unless there's some adjustments that come through that gives us the NPAT that we reference. Over page number 14 on the funding, let me and the interest rate. A couple of things. The net debt that we're showing is $765 million, up from $707. The real drivers there are twofold. We have the mark-to-market movements on the USPP, as well as the use of for some extra use of cash that we used to buy out some of these derivatives that we have mentioned in the past. In December, we made an announcement on that. There's also been some minor timing of cash flows. The major driver was the MTN on the USPP. We have undrawn bank facilities of $365 million, so taking the $150 million current debt out won't be an issue. In terms of what's probably most relevant, in terms of the interest cost, in 2013 we showed underlying interest cost for the full year of about $79.4 million. Like for like, we expect that number to come down to $65 million as a result of the buyback of the derivatives for this financial year, and for next year it will drop down to $60 million. That's really the benefit that we're getting from spending the $22 million on the refinancing and taking out the derivatives. Page number 15 sets out the balance sheet. The only comment I really wanted to make there is around the trade and other receivables. You see that relative to the previous 6 months, they've gone up from $84.8 million to $106 million. Biggest chunk there is other trade receivables that relate to the IRB business. Of the 106, $94.7 million relate to these trade receivables. That's slightly cyclical. So 12 months ago, that number was $114 million. So it's actually come back a little bit. The biggest chunk of that relates to undeposited checks. So this is players that are in-house or have just recently played. And that was $47.3 million at balance date. All of that money has been collected. So that's been good. And then John's referenced the 4-cent fully franked dividend that the board has decided to pay. That's sort of in line with our payout ratio if you see through the one-off expense of the refinancing. In terms of capital expenditure on page number 16, as you would expect, the profile is coming off post the expansion of Star. The bulk of our capital expenditure, that's the second bullet point on that page, bulk of our capital expenditure this year really related to the growth and the investments we're making in electronic gaming in Queensland, and we're pleased to see that starting to pay off. The outlook for our CapEx for this year is, you know, around about 150, 160 in line with D&A. That really depends on how quickly we get our approvals through in the Gold Coast to start the work there. Finally, the last page or the last point I wanted to refer to is just the sale of Townsville on page number 17. We made an announcement on that about 10 days ago. We entered into an agreement to sell Townsville to Colonial Leisure Group for $70 million. You should assume that we will book the profit from this transaction either this full year or 6 months after that. It really depends on how quickly the buyer is able to get through probity and get all the relevant approvals. And that determines when we book that profit. That basically concludes my discussion of the financials. I want to hand back to you, John, to take us through the outlook and the priorities.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate that. Just touching base real quick on the strategic priorities, I think it goes without saying that we continue to strive to improve the operational performance at both Star and our Queensland properties. I think there's been a lot of progress made, whether it be from a customer service standpoint, whether it be through greater marketing efficiencies, whether it be through the EBA agreements we talked about before. But the foundation has been set from an operational standpoint to now just try to primarily focus on driving the top line to really get the leverage out of the operational foundation that we've created. At the Gold Coast, of course, we've made a lot of announcements there recently covering some of the upgrades we want to do. We've also talked about the the casino systems that have been put in place throughout Queensland and Gold Coast and Brisbane. But one of the things that to stress here is it started in the first half of the year where we started to install Tito. During that first half, we also got good news regarding bill acceptors. We are substantially have adjusted all of our bill acceptors and all of our machines to accommodate the new rules, which of course allow for denominations up to 100. We are probably going to be in a position by the end of December, we probably had 50% of our machines were Tito, and by the end of March, April, we will be very close to 100%, if not at 100%. So we're seeing, and of course, before I get to that, we have also installed new product in that market, which was sorely needed. The changes that have taken place from a regulatory environment standpoint have been significant, substantial, welcomed. And again, we always take the opportunity to applaud the Newman government for helping to move these initiatives forward. So we saw great momentum in the second half as a result of those three, bill acceptor, Tito, and new product. We're seeing even more momentum going forward. So the expected uplift that we all thought was achievable, we're seeing that early on. And we're hoping that that momentum continues throughout the rest of the year. The Queens Wharf development process, I'm sure all of you are aware of what's going on. They announced the competitive bid process and expected timeline in December 19th. It's expected to be completed by the end of calendar 14. With the winning bid selected in early 15. Again, these are time frames and dates put out by the government, and until we hear otherwise, those are ones we are assuming. But again, we are bound by various confidentiality requirements under the ROI, and and those are going to continue throughout the process, whether it be EOI or RFDP. So we will not and cannot provide much information from now on going forward regarding that project as we comply with those requirements set out, of course, not only for us, but than anyone else who registers. The capital options review, as I'm sure all of you would know, we are constantly have and will continue to evaluate various ways for us to accommodate all of our plans, not only in Queensland, but here at the Star as we go forward. The bright spot, of course, is that these are all wonderful, compelling opportunities, and we're making some good strides in evaluating how to accommodate all of them. Again, slide 20, when you look at the Gold Coast more specifically, we have announced a $345 million expansion and upgrade of that property. We are firm believers in the Gold Coast market. We think that there is great opportunity here, not only with this development, but when you look at the potential beyond this development, it's rather significant, and there's no reason why this development and future development will put this property is really the preeminent tourist destination spot here in Australia. Of course, like any construction project anywhere, there's a lot of approvals that are required. We're working through those processes as we move forward. Difficult to predict an exact time frame as to when we could commence, but we expect to commence sometime in FY15. You're going to see, as part of the expansion, we would add new and improve the existing, and the combination of that will be a very compelling project here going forward that we think will have returns on the investment that would exceed our cost of capital. And again, the longer-term vision with all the size of the site and the ability to continue to develop out that Jupiter's property there is extremely exciting. and a great opportunity for this company going forward. I'll give you a little bit of a trading outlook, slide 22. I guess the best takeaway here is that every single one of our properties is up on the PCP for the month of January, and it's probably, it may be the only time I can recall that happening in this year. We're excited about what's happening. It kind of validates all the changes we've made, whether it be from a cost standpoint or a revenue optimization standpoint. So we're happy with what's going on there. You know, Chinese New Year, of course, here. As one would expect, our hotels are sold out. You know, you can ask us each hour, and the information can change as people understand what goes on with the volatility of that business. But you know, right now, as I sit here, I'm happy, and we are excited about this Chinese New Year. But again, that can change by the hour, if not by the minute. Our cost op program, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of framework around that to make sure that we don't get any creep in our expense. I think you're seeing that in the numbers. You're seeing that in the fact that we've, as Matt stated, updated our guidance in that regard to coming in sub 880 as opposed to 900 as we previously put out there. So I think that's obviously a significant takeaway for all of you when you ask about whether or not we're able to contain those expenses longer term. And again, when you look at the Queensland market, the modernization of that whole regulatory environment is extremely encouraging and exciting for us going forward. We've been able to even add more product. We believe we were being somewhat capacity constrained on the weekends at the Gold Coast. So we've added approximately 60 machines towards the end of the half, and we're seeing the impact of that early on. And we've also been able to add or squeeze in the case of the Treasury, or more product there. So between the regulatory changes, between being able to add some additional product on the floor, we're very encouraged and excited about Queensland going forward as well. And with that, we'll turn it over to questions. Operator?
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the star key followed by the number 2. Your first question comes from the line of Adam Alexander from Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Guys, I've got a couple of questions. Just the first one on the PGR. You pointed out it's down in both properties, 40% due to win, but just on the 60% that's due to volumes, what's sort of the main driver of that and what's turning that around sort of as we come into the second half? And then my second question is just on VIP volumes, down in both properties despite sort of global VIP in Macau having a pretty strong half. Just wondering whether, from your point of view, it's becoming a bit harder to attract VIPs from Macau down to Australia or any other color around that. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Adam. You look at the PGR, I mean, even when you take the Gold Coast, for instance, we had a whole percentage that was down 400 basis points, and if you're going to be down, you want to be down, in the whole percentage as opposed to the volume because the game statistics work themselves out. So about half the reduction you saw in Queensland was more hold-related. Then at the stars, you point out, being more volume. We've identified that specifically to a couple of patrons and a couple issues. In the case of patrons, sometimes that could be a timing issue where you had a handful of patrons that might have been in the first half that you didn't see this half. So they came in the first half of 13. We didn't see them in the first half of 14. Those folks can show up at any time. So when we can identify to situations like that where, like we can in this case, where some of them were international, that we haven't seen them back, they have been to the property on several occasions. We'd expect their visitation again going forward. And we are excited and encouraged by some of what we've been able to claw back in terms of that volume and win rate early in the second half of FY14. So there's nothing that I would look at there and say that there's a problem. I mean, I think the momentum we're seeing in volume and the recovery and our hold percentage, everything is happening as one would expect. With regard to VIP volumes, you know, that business, as we all know, is extremely volatile, and the year-over-year increases that we have seen, obviously our base of business is getting much bigger, and to maintain those significant increases year-over-year is more of a challenge. It's not one that we don't strive for, but it's more of a challenge as the base gets bigger. I think you saw a turn down in business, a reduction of business in Singapore as well. But I think we're all encouraged by what's going on in Macau. I think the worldwide volumes are still there. We're not hearing or seeing the business not wanting to come to Australia. We think there's still a very strong demand to come to Australia. I think we'll understand that a lot more after Chinese New Year this year. Of course, it falls earlier in the half this year than it did last year. And, you know, sometimes when you see it fall earlier, people delay a trip when that falls earlier in the year as opposed to later in the second half. So, again, I think the best time to look at the VIP volumes is going to be after the second half, where you can get a little bit more color on Chinese New Year, Thai New Year, et cetera, because they are such significant contributors to what goes on there.
Great. Thanks, John.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Goldsman from Citibank. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a question around mass gaming revenue. Is it visitation levels that are down, or is it the number of repeat visits, or is it average spend per visitor that's really driving the declines we're seeing in AGMs and the main gaming floor?
Well, I think when you look at the visitation, for instance, just to give you a little bit of color on that, in the first half of FY13, there was 48,000 new member signups. When you look at the first half of 14, there was 20,000. So there is a reduction in visitation as measured by new member signups of 28,000. When you look at the aggregate theoretical win potential with the 48,000 people that showed up in FY13, it was approximately 3.5 million. When you look at the aggregate win potential of the 20,000 people who signed up in FY14, it was approximately 4.3 million. So as you can see, the quality of the guests that we are attracting is much more significant, and the programs we have put in place is not to necessarily bribe people to join or to come, but to give them a valid reason to be a member of our clubs. So the visitation that we saw in the past that was driven by those types of programs that had a significant expense associated with them, but not necessarily the benefit of a good customer, those are gone. But we're seeing a uptick across all of our categories in terms of unique patrons and higher quality patrons. So that, again, is by design, and we're happy with what's going on there. The if you look at the EGM side of it, the electronic gaming side of it, in all cases now, when you get past January, you know, the company is ahead of the PCP, and we're encouraged by that, that we're doing well. And I think the programs are starting to get traction and kick in as the awareness kicks in. And that's what we were saying, is that we started to see a momentum acceleration in the second quarter, and that continue into January and, of course, early February.
With that, John, I mean, do you have any concern around the cost cuts that you've done around the employee line and advertising? I mean, do you expect that's going to have any impact on revenue growth in coming periods?
No, not at all. I mean, we haven't taken out any employees that are what we have said front facing that have a negative impact on customer service. I mean, I think when you look at our revenue volumes as they started to accelerate through the second half, we can see that. You know, a lot of what was taken out was, and we've explained this, of course, since early on, but a lot of what was taken out are people that don't touch a guest. So we've either gotten more efficient at our guest service or we've dealt with, and of course, one of the ways you get more efficient at your guest service is being able to empower people to make a decision, not necessarily have layers and layers of management because it takes too long to make decisions. So it's the upper levels, if you will, that have been streamlined to allow us to provide that better guest service on the floor.
Okay. My last question, John, on the FY13 conference call, you mentioned that you still expect the Star EBITDA to get back to its original target around $340 million. It looks like we won't reach that this year, but you know, how much of an improvement do we need to see in this grind business to really get us to that level in coming periods?
Well, it's interesting. The first half of the, call it the first quarter, was down. And we really started to see the business start to pick up as we expected with the awareness campaign that we embarked on with our Absolute Rewards program. So as that awareness became greater, we started to see that acceleration in play that one would expect. So here at the Star, albeit we had a low hold in the PGR, we're starting to see the EGM side pick up, and we are starting to see a recovery in our volumes in the PGR and, of course, a recovery in the hold percentage. So everything points in the right direction at the Star. You know, the 340 has always been a stretch target. I still think it is. Whether it's achievable this year or next, we'll have to wait, you know, and see based on luck factors and everything else that play into that. But the foundation has been set from a cost standpoint at the Star and the rest of the company, you know, to achieve company-wide results that are acceptable to all. And what we're focused now on is driving that top line, you know, to try to get to a number that's much closer to that 340 that all of you mentioned.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I'll pass on to other questions. Good luck, John.
Thanks, Marco.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Matt Ryan from JP Morgan. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'm just curious about your comment about the Gold Coast investment and expecting to exceed your cost of capital, which, you know, I'd assume you'd say that. So I guess what I'm looking for is something a little bit more specific, and maybe if you could break up what's actually being attributed to what you'd classify as maybe maintenance CapEx catch up versus maybe some expansion CapEx?
Well, I think when you look at the Gold Coast, I think everyone would agree and understand that there's been an underinvestment there. I mean, I look at our rooms, for instance, and it's been in the neighborhood of like 17 years since we invested in the rooms. You know, arguably the only thing that we've maintained the appropriate level investment at there has been in our gaming product, which obviously makes sense. And we're continuing to do that. And there's, as I mentioned earlier, a significant investment going in there now with the Tito Bill Acceptors and new product. But in order to maintain the longer-term trajectory of earnings that we need to as a company, you have to maintain these properties at a level that continues to attract and retain customers. So that property, similar to the Star, has never had a significant investment, for instance, in its private gaming area, and as a result, it's hard to remain competitive. It's the rest of the product. You can see with the decline in the non-gaming revenue, there's not a whole lot there to attract people in terms of variety or, you know, quality when you look at it from a reinvestment standpoint. So it's something that needs to take place, and then we also realize as a company that there's significant potential and opportunity there with the very high end of the business. So whether it be the private gaming rooms that we haven't invested in properly, or the international rebate business that wants to go there. The Gold Coast has tremendous appeal and attraction, but it's hard to get it there because we lack the product, frankly. So by addressing the highest end of the business, which you can see with the investment we're looking at, there's a new six-star tower. That's going to address all the shortcomings between the tower and between fixing the deferred maintenance that's there to make that really a brand new property that will be, you know, second to none, and set that property up for future success. So we're excited by that. I think if you were trying to slice that number up between what is deferred and what is growth, you know, I think you're probably looking in the neighborhood of about $100 million roughly. It relates to deferred maintenance improvement, and the balance relates to growth. But again, those are just kind of ballpark numbers.
Okay, thanks. And then I just had a follow-up question on the PGR business, just trying to understand your comments around maybe a few patrons not visiting the property. I think if you look at the you know, decline that you saw and apply the 60% of volume that you're talking about, you get to somewhere around a $15.5 million sort of decline because of volume, which is about 14%. So how many players are you actually talking about which would have contributed to that relative to maybe just general softness in the business or movement in market share to other properties?
Well, the way I look at that volume, you're probably in a neighborhood because of how hold percentages work, and you can't really do strictly apples to apples, because if you have a very low hold, for instance, people are winning, and therefore they're not buying in at the levels that they would typically buy in at. But you're probably looking at somewhere about in my estimates, about $10 million due to volume and the rest due to hold. And when you look at the volume side of it, there's some customers that you won't see again because for a multitude of reasons, could be they're excluded or barred or financial. And then there's customers that that we know it's a timing issue. Now, when you look at the situation where they're excluded or barred or passed away or all the different issues you can point to, or we'll call it a permanent difference as opposed to timing, I mean, that's just the nature of this business, right? I mean, that happens at the highest end where customers drop off and you find new customers. So we're pushing aggressively to, you know, backfill, if you will, the customers to drop off, and that's just something that all gaming companies need to do, because people aren't significant customers forever. There's always reasons for them dropping off. So you always have to be in a position to have programs to identify new, if you will, to replace the old. So that's what we're doing, and that's why I made the comment about what we are seeing early on in January, early part of February, is encouraging with regards to those that issue of finding new customers.
And maybe just a quick last one, maybe for Matt. So I think in the PCP, you had some reclassification of PGR from sort of VIP into the PGR business. I'm just wondering whether we're completely sort of like for like on a comparison now?
We are.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Bryan from Merrill Lynch. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, John. Morning, Matt. Just wanted to dig in, if we can, to a little bit more of the seasonality of the business, H2 on H1, and understand a bit more about your outlook commentary. It sounds like January and February started well, and you've obviously got the cost outs as well, but there's an awful lot of caveats in your comments. And if we look at the last 2 years, EBITDA has been down H2 and H1, obviously. So I'm just wondering, Matt, if you can actually hold EBITDA H2 and H1 as we head into the rest of the year.
We don't think that, given our business mix, that we have any real cyclicality across the two halves. The mix changes, right? So in the second half, we're more reliant on IRB doing well than we are in the first half, because we've got both Chinese New Year and Thai New Year, whereas in the first half we've got Christmas in it, which is more of a relevant to the core business. But, you know, So we don't actually, the way we look at it in budget, we don't have a huge difference between the two halves. If you go back in history over what happened over the last 2 years, you know, 2 years ago we were in January in the middle of the, you know, SID debacle and, you know, the discussion with the New South Wales government, the inquiry. We, you know, we had done a lot of pre-opening activity in H1 of that year of 2012 that sort of inflated revenue arguably in H1 and attracted a lot of business to the property in H1. As soon as that it was all open, we pulled the pre-opening expenses out, and then, you know, H2 as a result was a lot softer. Last year in H2, you know, we pulled out a lot of the excess marketing. We a lot of the promotional items were pulled out, and we revamped the loyalty system. So, you know, I think we understand what happened in the last 2 years, but we don't really believe that structurally we should have big cyclicality in our business today.
Okay, thank you. And just general theme question, I guess. It's been in the business for a while now that obviously I'm thinking Star here, that non-gaming has been growing faster than gaming, or obviously gaming's in decline. And you had a number of initiatives a year, even perhaps a year and a half ago, to try and improve that cross-sell. Why do you think that's not working, and how do you anticipate trying to change that going forward?
Why do you think cross-sell is not working?
Yeah, so obviously non-gaming is performing well in Star, as you've alluded to, and that's been the theme now for a good almost 2 years, really, in the business. But you're not getting those non-gaming customers into gaming, and you set up a number of initiatives to try and improve that, but it doesn't seem to be flowing through as yet.
Well, I think we started to see that in the second half. A couple reasons. One, when you look at the improvement in the non-gaming, if you will, some of it, in the case, let's say, of the event center, is something that is in the current year that wasn't in the prior. So, you know, we have a facility that we're driving probably somewhere around $1 million a month worth of revenue or business with a pretty strong margin. And we estimate that we're probably looking at about 200,000 people incrementally a year attending functions there. So the potential for driving more business, albeit it could even be non-rated. You know, they walk through the property, they drop a couple dollars, whether it be on a table or a machine, or buy an extra drink. I mean, that's all that extra spend you can get out of those folks. I think when you look at some of the improvement you're seeing in the non-gaming, it's hotel-related, and that's by design and strategy. We had arguably policies in place that was tending to overcomp some of our customers. So we have pulled that overcomping out, which has allowed us to free up those rooms to be able to sell more cash business. So if you had someone staying in the room for free that wasn't playing on a table or slot, we obviously weren't seeing that. So now we've pulled all that out of the market, if you will, replaced it with cash business, which is why you're seeing the improvement on the room side. As part of our Absolute Rewards program, you're looking at, what's baked into the tier structure is the ability for guests to get free room nights across all of our properties, and the number of room nights you get is greater, of course, given the higher tier status that you're in. So we continue to look at that, to evolve that. We recently even added more room nights because of the upside potential we're starting to see and the acceptance level that our guests are showing by virtue of how they're redeeming those rooms. So some of it was a difference in strategy that made a lot of sense, and that's why you're seeing the improvement in the non-gaming and the accelerated improvement in our gaming because of the mix of people in the hotel.
Okay. Thank you.
One or two more questions, operator?
Yes, your next line comes from the line of Sasha Crayon from CLSA. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Matt.
Morning.
Just two Two questions from me, please. Just in relation to VIP, I think, Matt, you mentioned that you might have pulled back the commissions a bit in the VIP business in the half. Can you give us a feel for what those commission rates are this year versus last year? And do you actually need to lift those rates again given the decline in volumes that we saw and perhaps also given some of the increasing competition for VIPs in the region? And then secondly, on EGMs, you used to provide us with a chart which gave us the Stars' market share relative to the Sydney market, the broader market. I think it was about 8% or just over that in first half 13. Perhaps if you can give us a feel for where you are now relative to the broader market. Thanks. Yeah,
on the IRB commissions, we're looking at 0.85% versus 0.88 12 months ago. But it's come back a little bit, and obviously on the big turnover number, that's a relevant shift. It's more of a result of the types of businesses, the types of junkets, you know, who brings the business up under what regime, rather than us having pulled the number back. We know these programs, you know, the programs are pretty transparent and competitive. We know we're being competitive, but I don't think that we have pulled them back too much or that, you know, we're out of the market. So it's just, you know, the commission is just one of the results of the way the business mix has fallen this year. In terms of the market share, we have in the past provided these numbers, and I think we'll provide those again in the future. We have dropped about, for the quarter, about a quarter of a percent of market share in slots. For the last statistic that we have available is for the first quarter of the half. As John referenced, we had, you know, a soft first quarter in the core business, and you know, we expect that we've done a lot better in the second quarter than that. But you know, it's a good pickup. We should put those market share numbers back in.
Just a quick follow up on that. In terms of the free play, which you've now ended, when do you actually cycle the end of that free play you were giving to players?
Now.
Okay.
So this quarter here was still a little bit inflated. But we took it back 12 months ago pretty drastically, and then the fourth quarter of last year was pretty clean.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Your next line question comes from the line of Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
You guys have alluded to a new capital program at Star in terms of, I think, some financial guidance over the next few years. I'm just wondering if that's being scoped out. Obviously, with the performance of the PGR, it may be more necessary. So can you describe where you're at with that new capital program and what we should expect?
I think it's an area we've been talking about now, at least since I've been here, and what the message we've been saying, which really hasn't changed, that we think we're comfortable with the spend being on average about what our annual depreciation is, which is about $100 million. Mm-hmm. So we think within that envelope, if you will, we can do the PGR improvements that we believe we need to do, as well as some of the additional non-gaming we need to add into the property. So that over the medium term is probably what you're looking at on average.
Okay. And no specific projects have been slated yet that you can describe, sort of conceptual at this stage.
Well, there's two projects that we are spending, several projects we're spending time on, but two that are probably going to happen sooner rather than later would be a buffet project we mentioned and a room renovation. So those two projects, I can foresee those projects potentially, again, subject to various approvals and everything else one needs to achieve, maybe getting started in the back half of the second half of 14. You know, but that could be, you know, pushing into 15 subject to yep. the approval process.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's all I got.
Thanks, Larry.
Your next question comes from the line of Philip Wensley from Paradice Investment Management. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, guys. Given the comments from John just about being pleased with the momentum of the revamped loyalty program, and you know, given revenue's actually down, I'm just wondering if you can give us some sort of other on some other operating metrics to sort of justify that statement, please.
Well, I think what I was mentioning is that you're looking at a program that basically was implemented in June of 13. So when you look at what's happened between June of 13 and December, that's really what I'm referencing. So as we've been mentioning throughout the call, it was really a tale of two quarters. I mean, the first quarter being in our core business being much softer than the second quarter, and the second quarter starting to reflect that awareness, and as a result, the momentum and the pickup and play. So that's where we get excited by what can happen given that awareness that's starting to take place with our customer base. I mean, we're seeing, for instance, when you look at some of those metrics, we're seeing an increase in unique active members. We're seeing an increase in the use of discounts. So, again, the various tiers provide discounts that are higher at the higher tier levels. And when you look at, say, the use of those discounts by our customers in June and compare that to the use of those customers by our customers in December, they've accelerated in a very meaningful way. And it's moving, of course, in the same direction as our revenue. So that's why we're getting excited by that. Part of the program has a shopping component. We've seen a tremendous acceleration in the use of our shopping. It also includes discounts on rooms as well as comp rooms, which I referenced in a previous question. We've seen a tremendous acceleration in the use of those discounts as well as the comp rooms as well. And most encouragingly, we're seeing cross-property utilization of those room comps and discounts, but primarily room comps, meaning that a typical Star Sydney customer goes to the Gold Coast or vice versa, or a Brisbane customer uses their comp room nights down at Gold Coast. So, you know, something we've had recent months, where at the Gold Coast, for instance, over 50% of their comp room nights are driven by patrons that are coming from outside of the traditional Gold Coast market of, say, 40K. So to see that cross-property utilization is what we were hoping to achieve. We're starting to see that, and the fact that it's picking up demonstrates the awareness. I mean, arguably, we probably could have done a better job early on when we rolled out these programs. But the credit to the team that we realized that we needed to enhance that awareness. We've done that, and that's why I think we're starting to see that accelerate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your last question comes from the line of Sam Theodore from UBS. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just one quick one for Matt. Just looking at the slide of the receivables aging at the end in the appendices,
yep.
There obviously seems to have been a quite significant improvement relative to June. Just wondering if you could just talk us through that.
Look, one comment on that slide is that the receivables also doesn't show the provisions that we've taken against that. And one big thing that's happened, I do think that the book is well provided for and conservative. But you know, one of the things that we did between June and December was there was quite a few old data debt that we had fully provided for, and we just wrote those off to clean up the books. We continue to pursue these debtors and, you know, make some progress, but from an accounting point of view, they've been written off.
Okay.
So it looks probably a little bit better than you think, but it is a good story.
Cool, thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, operator. Appreciate everyone's time. We'll talk to everyone later. Thank you.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participating. You may all disconnect.